We don't know my name is Chalita. I'm an alcoholic. This is a very impressive group. Actually, I'm going to be talking about my two favorite subjects. One is me, and the other is it. So I shouldn't feel that nervous about it, because all I have to let you know really it is what my life has been in Alcoholics Anonymous and before I got here. My voice is a little strange. About 6 or 8 years ago, I have cancer, and I lost some vocal cords, and I guess this is my, I'm perfectly okay now, but this is probably, I'm a little anxious, and this is the first thing that it happened, so you bear with me with my voice. The book suggests that we should talk a little bit about the way it used to be like, what happened to us, and the way we are now. And I love this meeting because it's really basic AA, and I like the structure, because I came to this meeting to save my life, which we have, and I like to really follow the format. I was born in South America, from Chile, and I come from a middle class family. I come from a large family, and women, there were 5 women and 2 men. And my parents were never rich, or you know, typical middle class. My father was the typical father. He, you know, he had conditional love. We have to perform. He loved everything went into this home for to study and to learn. He always felt that knowledge was power, and that we really should achieve and learn. I'm very grateful for that. And my mother, on the other hand, was the, you know, the typical Latin mother or American mother. The women from American women are very, very tender. Latin women are not. That is absolutely a misconception. We have this beautiful image of the Madonna, you know, the baby. But that's about it. We're not really very tender people. American women are extremely tender. But my mother, you know, with her upbringing, she was a typical mother, a very good mother. She was always the first one to get up, the last one to go to bed. She said to it that things were, you know, done very properly. I always thought she was very strong, but how can you really have it? There was this children, it was always the cousin of the cousin. We had about 10 in the house. So she has to be that way. I was born when my parents were, my mother was about 38 and my father was almost approaching 50. And I always felt that he didn't love me. The little guy was tired, you know, with all these children. And then that I have to work at the theater because that was one of my excuses to drink. And, but I always felt very different. I always felt quite I didn't belong. I was a very beautiful child. I was very bright. I'm very intelligent, but this has nothing to do with me, you know, that's genetic. So I had nothing to do in there. Both my parents were extremely bright. And I was a very busy child. I was a very curious child. And I was always getting into things. And my mother always for some, I guess because of my behavior, she always bestowed much more attention and love to me, but she always beat me up more than anybody. I don't believe I have been a bad child. I want to make that distinction. That was our culture. And when I asked him, my friend, I said, why did you beat me up? He said, you're mean. That is something. He said, that's okay. So it is it. That's right. She didn't say I was bad. She said, you're mean. So thank God, you know. So that was the, I have never had any hang-ups about that. That is the way you know, she was taught, and I'm glad she did, because I didn't hear what she did. So, after, I really had a happy childhood, you know, I'm a teenager, and it's okay, you know, I love it. They gave us everything that's good, any extra little money, went into, you know, lessons, piano, dances, and whatever. I always say that I was really as a child. But it wasn't that much either. You know, I was a boy making to this country to see the abundance of things. Chile basically very poor country, natural resources. So things are really sort of scarce. It's not really like the United States at all. Everything was studied and learned and very organized. And I had a tendency, you know, to like that because I didn't have security. I had never been a very secure person. And I remember very well then, I wanted to be an actress because that was the normal. You know, they told me I was pretty and I wanted to be different and I wanted my parents to be proud of me. My father said they didn't have anything to do with that because of fashion and he said I had to go to school and university. But at some point, my mother helped me. I don't know how to get along with my father, but she did. And I went to drama school and I was quite young. And she was always with me. I photographed very well. Not because I'm that pretty, but it's a bone structure. That's what they said. And I looked much better than I was. I took on the eye of this email, you know. So I became very, very popular, very famous. I did a lot of films. I got a contract with Chile Films. And I did theater. But my only goal in life, and I have no idea where this came from, I always wanted to come to this country. All my life. So the moment that I finished the contract, I finished the film about 2 o'clock in the morning. At 7 o'clock, the same day I was on a plane to come to the United States. I was about 18 years of age and I went to the Pasadena Playhouse. I had drank wine because Chile has excellent wine and this was more normal and they give the wine with water to children. But nothing particularly happened, but at the first drink truthfully that I had, I was about 16 or something, and we were on vacation and it was a winter night. Santiago, the capital, is very cold. And we were about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning doing the scene, you know, some sort of a bridge, whatever it is. And I was so cool that I could hardly move. And somebody had the brilliant idea of getting a shot of a scotch. And that changed my life. That's what I have wanted all my life. All my insecurities, all my fear. I wanted to be so grown up. And immediately left me. From that time, I was always a periodic drinker. I never drank bourbon. I have no capacity for alcohol. I never did. I would have one or two drinks and I was gone. I did not have a blackout at that time, but I always felt very ashamed after I drank. The feeling of this unpredictable feeling when I would, before I would take that first drink, it really, I had to fight it because I didn't like drunk people, I didn't like drunkenness, and I really didn't like, not so much to be controlled by the fear and the shame that what I may do. But of course that was, you know, very promptly put aside, you know, I would take that drink. I came to the United States, I went to the Pasadena Playhouse. I had a contract to work in Mexico, I was so busy promoting myself, I never did anything. I discovered that in order for me to drink, I had to have two things. One was an excuse and the other permission. And I discovered at that time that I remember having a school of thinking essential folks at my time when I was about 19 or 20. And I remember, yeah, how can you look bad? And besides, I was periodic, so on my good times, I would be very, you know, self-made, and I have always been horrified about being overweight, because when I first arrived in the United States, my English, I didn't really speak very well English, it hasn't progressed that much, but you know, at that time I didn't understand it. So what happened was that I proceeded, I lived with a family who had 2 children, American family, lovely people, and I was really very sheltered. But Chile is a very small country. There is 10 million people, you know, the end of the world. And I came to this unbelievable place, and I was horrified. And I could not get into the university because of my English. So I proceeded there, and they told me I had to take a year to develop anything at the school, and I learned English. During the process, I weighed normally what I weighed is about 160 pounds, and I went to about 183 pounds. And it was absolutely horrendous. All I wanted to do was to die. All I wanted to do was just to eat and sleep in the darkness and well, and I would fall asleep immediately. And, you know, the age of where they make you and myself, my sons were, you know, the son that I love, where I never smile again, which, you know, there's nothing left for me, and all these ridiculous things. And I would get drunk periodically. I believe in many ways. I always wanted to kill myself. I don't know where that came from. And every time I would get into that point, I would get drunk, I would finish the drink, and then I would be okay again. The lady that I was living with, somewhat she said that I was so deeply unhappy, I had tried to cut my veins several times. I never had time. So she took me to a doctor, and it's amazing to me that I was able to understand at that time that it was an emotional need, and this is why I ate that way. And I went to the vegan diet. My drinking at that time was very sporadic, and it would be like a New Year's or some special party. But I was really very frightened to drink. My biggest fear was that the immigration would get my green card, would be deported, and go back with this terrible chain and go back to my country. And that took me for many, many, many great with a big crowd of years. I learned to die being very compulsive. I'm a very compulsive person, very obsessed. Instead of going to 700 calories, I went to 400 calories. So in less than 7 or 8 months, I went back to my weight. I never been fat again, but then I started drinking. And I wondered the contract that I had in another country. I never did anything. And then also I acquired a couple of horses that also kept me from drinking for a while. And from then on, I was a traveling drunk. I was always going somewhere. And a friend of mine many years later described me, and she said, you are the guest of the world. Treat me nicely, and when night comes back, don't get too close. That was precisely the way I was. In my personal life, I felt having children and getting married, that was totally new to me. I didn't even consider this aspect. I was in eternal pain. I didn't know what I was. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know why I was here. And the only relief that I could find was when I was drinking. And when I wasn't drinking, I would then develop the ulcers. I did not take medications at that time. And I remember after about being 4 or 5 years in the United States, I went back to South America. And I remember I had my own little theater, and one day, but this time about 25 or so, and I was so paralyzed with that. It was one of my dry spells. I was not drinking at this time. Usually when I was, especially on the stage, I did not drink. And I was so frightened. I remember we were doing a Molokai play, which was a very light comedy, and I had to make a gesture with my arm. And I was incapable of ordering my arm to move. I was that frightened. And I knew as an actress I was finished. So I apparently got another scholarship, and I went to England, I went to France, you know. I don't even remember, I was going all over the place. And the episodes of my drinking were becoming closer and closer together. I remember all those years as one of the most painful experiences in my life. I remember one time in Milan, I was at the airport, I was there. I had made a fair amount of money, so I spent it all in my traveling, trying to find whoever I think I was. And of course I did it all. And I remember there was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I said, what am I doing here? Why am I here? And the pain was so big that I had absolutely no other choice at that time but to get drunk again. And I say that during all my life, death has been, for some reason, I have had a lot of experience with death. People I have been close to since I was about 13 years of age, because one of his sister was murdered and it was very dramatic. Then I fell in love with a beautiful American man. I always had American man. Oh, I really like Latin. I like blue, blue-eyed, gold-looking man for me. And I adored this man. He was gorgeous. He looked like the prince, you know, from Mombasa or somebody. I just adore him. So about when I was about 24, he died. And I had sort of a personality change at the time. I'm normally a very energetic, hyper, busy person. And I became someone who was apologetic, who I was sorry because I was breathing. I seldom talk. It was a terrible change, except when I was drunk. I was a very, very sorry drunk. I was a crying drunk. I was not a familiar drunk, I was a crying drunk. Or I was just so consumed with tragedy, it was unbelievable. So what I do, I also was a sleepy drunk. If I would go out with someone, my first thing would be, oh, I can't drink more than one drink, I couldn't pass the ball. And then I would get hungry when I get completely drunk. I was always hiding. I had to be somewhere. I knew that this was not the right thing to do. It never occurred to me that the way to solve problems, it was not to get drunk. I suffered tremendously. I had the worst hangovers anybody can have. I never could do two things at the same time. I either get drunk and nothing else. I could never work and drink. Anything that has to do with personal involvement, that was always the question. Who would want me to begin with? I was crying all the time. But besides that, I was really, I was very frightened that I would, I don't understand violence. It's a situation that I'm incapable to understand. And I was always deeply afraid of violence or that something may happen to me. So in a way, I was sort of protected while in a little situation, but somewhat I was protected. No wonder I nearly got arrested. And I worked peacefully to be getting that many problems. But I remember feeling in 1970, in the late 50s, I decided to go back to South America. And by this time, my drinking has improved. I will disappear, I will hide from my family, I was unable to work. And it was either being ready for the drink, drinking, and finishing a drink, and trying to get healthy again. By 1960, for some reason, I had been away for several years. Some told me that my answer was to come back to this country. And I did. I came back in 1960-61. I had been without drinking for about 7 months after that time, but taking also interviews. And I remember the moment that I arrived in the United States, I took the first drink again. This was a drink who, a week later, I ended up in Chile again. I have no idea how I got on that plane, how I went back there, and back to the United States again, all within 15 days. All the money that I had, of course, was, you know, very expensive to fly to Chile. So this was a very, very violent, dramatic, it was a horrendous. There are almost a year and a half, 2 years. During that time, I married an American man who I hardly knew. I knew her for about 3 months. He said, "Would you like to get married?" I said, "Sure." So, you know, again, and I'm very grateful that God sent this man in my life because, fortunately, he was a very honorable person. But, you know, that's not very, very well, you know, to marry me, that condition. But at the same time, that obviously was not going to work out. You know, you don't marry people you don't know. I mean, this is ridiculous. And what happened to me was that I didn't even like him. You were like that because I didn't know who he was. And then he says, "No, I am not going to, you know, stay in this marriage with somebody who drinks because this is what happened to me." Then I discovered he had married 5 times previously to drunk women. So I think he had a problem. He was not an alcoholic himself, you know. But during this time, I decided that to have a child, that would be the answer. So once again, I'm in this time alone in my dry period. And I remember after about the first month, they were sitting in the house, and we were very close by here in Canton. And I remember, I can't drink. I can't. This is, you know, I'm pregnant, and I could not do it. And I didn't drink again. And at that time, I left him. And about 3-4 months later, I lost a child. The baby was born dead. He had a fatal alcohol syndrome. I'm very grateful to God that he died, because I would have been impaired. It would have been very difficult. And I remember the guilt and the shame. I was extremely ill because I was in a very poor shape. I had drank around the clock. I went to an apartment behind the Ambassador Hotel with the road was, I'm talking about 1961. It was $38 a month. They closed the door at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we can imagine the sort of a place that was coming from a beautiful home here in North Campus. That's what I knew about. And I remember, I didn't know. Around the clock, I remember looking at the window, and I didn't know it was day, it was night. And I felt a tremendous feeling of loneliness. I had all I wanted to do was to kill myself. I felt so tremendously guilty. I would not talk to anyone. And I remember one time trying to go to the liquor store, but I would buy a lot of frozen food. Of course, I would never eat it. And I would hide the liquor in this horrible place for myself. Eventually, what happened was that I was in such a bad condition that I had a massive hemorrhage and I was taken to the hospital. At that time, I was somebody saying, called the ambulance. I don't remember it. But the thing is, I was working out in a hospital somewhere. And this is by this time, 1962. And I remember a very nice old man who was my doctor. I was knowing him. And he said, you know, he almost died. They had given him 14 pounds of blood. And they want to see to it that you get better. So what happened was that for the first time in my life, I don't know where this came from, what happened to me, I looked at him and I said, Dr. Branch, alcohol is my problem. Never please help me. I have never even used that terminology, never. I have never even considered this to be a problem. This old doctor, he carried me for twice and time until I got myself back. I was, you know, I was very, very thin, and I was very, very weak to give me some shots of vitamins and so forth. And he sent me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. My last dream was the 16th of September 1962 at that time. And what happened then was that I found here what I had been looking for all my life. I could not believe that other people felt the way I did. I did not believe that people would talk about this thing. I thought I was crazy. I thought, well, if I was. But the fact that, you know, that you people have found a way is unbelievable. I continue going to meetings for every single day of my life for the next 3 years. Dr. Branch was the person who guided me. And then I went to see a spiritual advisor who was a priest. I read him my first email and inventory because he didn't find anything to read about me. And I have no money, I have absolutely nothing. And then the doctor said, well, why don't you work in a bank? Bank. Here I am, this glorious lady. I mean, this is ridiculous. I look terrible. And so I'm very grateful to the Bank of America. This is the only country in the world that they will pay you to teach you. This is unbelievable. And I was, all I had to do, I lived with a family, I rented a room in Fasancier in Saltel, beautiful people, but the boys helped me. I learned how to drive. They bought me my first car. And I was the happiest person. All of my big salary was $325 a month. And I loved it, and it was beautiful, and I had just $5 left, and that was good enough for me. And I went all I had to do, like my sponsor says, you were to meet us and you were to work. Everything else is a first benefit. The first year that I did was that I didn't even have coffee with a man, let alone anything else. They said, you don't even log. I didn't. The second year, the investment at this time of divorce, the man who lived in Kenton, he felt that no, this was not for me, that we should get remarried. I would not advise anybody to make amends remarrying anybody. It doesn't work. Because if the first time was bad, the second time was ridiculous. It just did not work at all. It lasted about 4 months. And I knew, and it always prayed, and I have always believed in a higher power, which I choose to call God. And I always felt that he has always been with me. I have shut him out. I have lost consciousness with my higher power every time I have taken a pill or a drink. He has never done that. He has always been there for me. And I have always prayed, and I said, you know, just give me 2 seconds to make that phone call. The book says very clearly, sometimes we are without defense against that first drink. But I was very active in the program, and my husband did not like it. He said that this was beneath him. I asked him one time, I said, what do you think an alcoholic is? He said, somebody who falls from a bus door. I didn't know what it is. So I said, well, that's his problem. And I remember at 3 o'clock in the morning when I called my sponsor, and I said, please come and get me because I'm about to take a drink. And she did. I continued the prayer, continued working, but 19, about 4 years later, I met him, who changed my life. And of course, you know, if I would have put all the emotional investment and all the time, I'd be president of the United States to try to cash people out. It was unbelievable. But at the same time, that the 6 years, I have become increasingly satisfied. I've been a good girl for 6 years. Where did it end? You know, I'm still at the bank, maybe 325 a month. I don't know, I still live in, you know, one room. And things did not look very well for me. I got involved in a lot of jealousy. I wanted everything. And needless to say, I then proceeded naturally, my neurotic manifestation to have ulcers. And I got a medication. And when I was 6 years in the program, I drank again. This was the most devastating experience that I had at that time. I felt so ashamed. I felt so guilty. I went to family house. But let me shoot on my shoulder. I have never forgiven myself for breaking my sobriety. Because previous to that, I had become Miss AA. I didn't speak very often. Because at that time, I really abused that privilege. I have become, I have changed, you know, the camera for the podium. And I was very witty, and I was very fine. And if I want to do that, I can do it. I've been trying to do it. And it has nothing really to do with me, truthfully. And I always like to relate the experience that I have been invited to a convention at North, in Northern California. We had about 400 people, I don't know. And I gave this unbelievable talk, I thought. And the little guy came to me afterwards, and he said, you know what? You look at him totally peaceful. I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you know, he said one word about alcohol. You talk about religion, you talk about psychology. I'm not a very well educated person. So this was all, you know, just things that I have read here and there. And I always remember that because I have chosen to completely forget. I personally believe at the time it was beneath me to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That had a tremendous stigma for me. I didn't understand at the time that alcoholism was a disease. I said it was not a disease, it was a mental issue, I was a bad person. And who wants to feel that you are a bad person? In 1968, I went through family years, and by 1970, I married him, and I had everything I always wanted. You know, I was a member, they gave my car, they gave my course, whatever I thought that I wanted. And I was scared to death. I'm the typical example for the drug and drug says that I'll be afraid I will not get what I want, or I will be afraid I will lose what I have. I understood nothing about commitment, compassion, generosity, love, fellowship, absolutely nothing. I am going through people's life always thinking of me, and whatever was left was for me. I have never considered anybody else's feeling, never done me to even consider how you felt. I have changed somewhat because I have been sober for 6 years, but still it was an awful lot that I have to grow up. I've been married to the same man for many years. He's a wonderful person. He's a very gentle, he's not an alcoholic. And he's really a prince of a man. He's the American with the blue eyes. I love him very much. And he had the patience and the tenderness and the compassion to somewhat guide me, to help me to discover myself. In 1971 to 1972, 73, four people, very important in my life, died. I was incapable of processing any more grief. I had never processed any more grief. And it was very, very difficult. It had nothing to do with my husband. It was an outside job. The beginning of ulcers. And in October of 1973, in my desperation, I had gone and see a psychiatrist, and he gave me prompting in pills, and I became addicted to the sleeping pills and everything that you happened to be there. I used to say that he did this and I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. That is not true. My husband is a physician, and he's a professor of medicine. He's a very good doctor. Instead of going to him and ask him to recommend or find someone, people from all over the country called him to get advice from his knowledge, try to refer to, you know, to another physician, and he became a hairdresser. And so, did you find a psychiatrist for me? She sure did. It was the most expensive patient I ever found. $20,000 murder in 7 years. His big disclosure was that, what did he say? Oh, I was not a delinquent. That was his diagnosis, his diagnosis. Fortunately for me, my husband one day, obviously I was intoxicated with the pills he saw me, and he said, Chelita, what is happening? Now, I have to confess. I told him I was seeing this doctor, so he went to talk to him. And he had given me, at that time, 300 seconds of 50 milligrams. And Bill was horrified. The 9th of October, I think it was probably about the 23rd or 24th, not very clear to me. I wrote 89 pounds. I have public answers. I was a babbling idiot with all this medication. I knew that I'll die. The psychic thing was so unbelievable. And I just, but I haven't drank. I didn't know that the pill was the same thing. And I drank for that night. In a blackout, that night, I called for help. And this is 17 years ago. And a beautiful woman that I haven't seen for a long time died at about 29 years. The husband made it very clear, and he made the real intervention on me. He had told me this morning, that morning, he said, "Chilita, either as a doctor or a man, that I love you very much, I can do anything for you. And if you choose to kill yourself, that is your ultimate decision of freedom. I will not stop you. That is entirely up to you. There are too many people who want to get around here and meet me. But we must make different living arrangements. I refuse to come home to a completely intoxicated woman." He was not angry. He was not sad. He was desolate. And I knew he meant it. I called for help the kidney hospital. I was in the hospital for a long time between the ulcers and everything else. And I went from there, from the hospital, being detoxed from barbiturates. It's a very, very serious matter. I went to Vesta House. I'm a product of a recovery home. I believe in recovery homes. And I believe that being there, and I got on my knees, and for the first time in my life, I truthfully said, "God, it doesn't make any difference what I believe. My life is, you are helping me to make a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I never had. I never had. It doesn't matter if they will ever come back into my life. It doesn't matter if I ever drive a car again. It doesn't matter if I have a job again. Just please help me to be sober one day at a time and to make a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous." I stayed in Vesta House for 6 months, and I went back for a year, every single morning, for the first meeting. I went out, and I started working in the Westwood office. And when I had a year, I became secretary of a meeting, and I started working in recovery homes. I'm very involved in recovery homes. And for the first time, all that first year, I remember looking at my husband and thinking, if he thinks that I'm a worthwhile human being, maybe he's right. I truthfully have to take his opinion of me, because knowing he was the only one to die. I do not tell you that nothing else, from then or today, has he ever, ever talked about this. Never. He guided me, he was a strong, he did me very well, and my Alcoholics Anonymous living in my Alcoholics Anonymous life is sacred to him. He has never done anything with me, maybe I have to impress that on him, and he's very supportive of anything that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have worked at the Hispanic, I have been involved. He helped me to open the first Hispanic mujeres in Pasadena, Hispanic home for women. The only way he has helped me is that because of his profession, he has access to all people who are financially very successful. And this is the only time that he has done and asked his people to give him help with this project. This is what we need. And it has been unbelievable. Now he has some impressions, but it has been an unbelievable journey. Many things have happened since the 17 years. I have found a life that I never, never believed to be possible. I have found that I trust. This is my emotional home. Whatever happened to me, there is nothing that would be that terrible that with me I cannot walk through. My mother died 2 years ago, and I was unbelievable. I never thought that I could live through my father, cancer. About 15 days ago, my youngest brother diagnosed me that he had a terminal cancer. And it has been the normal process, sadness, of grief, of pain, but my God is so unbelievable through you. that you have carried, you have helped me. My life today, it is so entirely different. All of these things that have happened in my life, you have helped me today to realize I know practically nothing. That I have the relapse, I don't know, I will never know. I can give you a thousand reasons, but it doesn't make any difference. It was in the process of growing up. My feeling is that I drank because it was too painful for me to live in another way. But it has been the greatest gift, my pain, with you, to heal me and to carry me and to help me to try to discover who I am. Because I truthfully believe that the only choice that I will ever have in my life to get a glance at myself is through you. When you express an emotion and a feeling, and if I identify it, it's probably because I have it. That's the only way that I will ever know who I am. I am so grateful to all of you because you have given me back my life. Thank you.